Welcome to Flocking Amazing, the podcast all about deep and joyful learning from the team at Bird Brain Technologies. I'm your host, Sarah Fitzhenry, robot fairy godmother, and all-around education enthusiast. Bird Brain is known for its groundbreaking technology for students, but this podcast is all about the grown-ups that guide and inspire them. And I have another fabulous grown-up here today to talk to you, Greg Macer. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This is my first podcast ever.
Your first podcast?
Yeah.
I wish I'd known. I would have like confetti or streamers or something.
It's all right. I'm mentally having those go through my head right now. Okay. So it's
I'll
all good.
I'll give you some jazz hands. And listeners, poor Greg wrote in for guidance, wanted to talk to someone about a project. And we had a meeting. And at the end of the meeting, I was like, Greg, you have to come on our podcast. So all he wanted was some help with some resources. And I roped him right into being on Flocking Amazing. So thank you for being such a good sport.
Yes, I'm honored to be here.
And we will have a little bit of bonus content today. This episode is going to be a little longer because this project that Greg wrote in about is so cool that I really want him to tell you about it towards the end. So we'll get a little bit of bonus information from you. But first, let's dive in. Who are you and what is your teaching story?
Well, I started in education like 18 years ago, and I started out as a fifth grade science and technology teacher in North Carolina, which is what kind of got me interested in educational technology, which led me to this job, which I'm currently working with an intermediate unit in Pennsylvania. We work in the North Central region, which is very rural. And I work originally was instructional technology, so just doing a lot within that realm. But in the last 7 years, it's very much morphed to being a lot more involved within STEM. And so that is pretty much my main priority now is getting out and working with all content area teachers and all grade levels in how they can implement STEM in their classroom. And in particular, the STEM mindset of creating problem solvers and collaborative thinkers. So that has been my mission as of currently.
Oh, what a great mission. Tell us about your journey to technology and creative robotics. What was your journey like from fifth grade teacher to intermediate unit technology czar, which is what I'm going to call you now?
Ooh, I like czar. I'll take czar. So I think it's all just in how I learned. Like So when I grew up with a brother that was younger than me and gifted. And I am not in that like gifted, talented type of realm. Like I am just a normal student that like struggled to get C's, but was happy to get C's, get B's. And like A's were just like, whoa, mind blowing. But like, it was the way that I learned that like I only had a few teachers that really kind of engage me in a way that was hands-on. I'm always hands-on and I need to have things explained to me in different ways. Like a teacher can explain it one way, but if I can hear it another way from somebody else, I start to think and understand things better. And so I was able like to find my own niche and like, I like to take things apart and like just see how they work. And so I tried to bring that to students, like particularly in my classroom. And so the first way is like just being hands-on and trying to make everything hands-on. I was lucky in that I was in science for most of my career in teaching. And so science was a really easy, I think a lot easier of a subject area to kind of allow more hands-on.
Especially that however many years ago when hands-on wasn't quite as big as it is now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the same time, in North Carolina, it was probably like 5 years into it, they started the state test for science. And it was horrendous. It was like a 80 problem vocabulary quiz. Like you didn't really get what a kid knew other than the vocabulary of it. But it's like one thing to know what abiotic means and another thing to know how abiotic, whether I really understand the term or not, affects an ecosystem. And so I know they knew it. They knew how these things work. But when you're thrown in front of a test with 80 questions, abiotic and biotic, oh, I don't remember which one was which. it was tough. And so like, it was trying to one bridge that and meet those in the middle, because I, like, my students didn't do horrible in the test. Mm-hmm. Like, we definitely learned to grow with it as the test changed. And it was like, and that was one of the things where educational technology, like Quizlet, just became like, this is the tool I want to use. Yeah. Because I knew it was a, something
drilling that, skills, right? Yeah. Drill and kill.
Yeah. And I hated note cards all over my classroom. But it was like one of those things where it's like, if I need to give them homework, I want them to just do 10 words a night, 10 words a night. So like meaningful to the test, not necessarily meaningful to the, to me as a teacher and like what these kids in all honesty needed to know, like most important part of what they needed to know. But I knew like, let's just have them drill these at home. And, you know, it gradually did better, but like we found our ways to do that. But to me, I think I'm going way off point of what the question was, because that's what I tend to do. I talk.
No, I'm so into it. Keep going. Keep going.
But yeah, so that's what got me into to really that just hands-on and being and showing kids multiple ways. And then the other thing was like we would do centers, and I was teaching one when Google made a big appearance and like the whole Google ecosystem and Gmail and Classroom and stuff were coming out. And it was utilizing those tools. And then iPads was another one that we started that just rolled out. And we had like it was a big deal. Like we had six in all of fifth grade. And I was the only teacher that I would always sign them out. I want them. And I would always put them in centers. And they would be the thing that led my center. But more importantly, I didn't want them to be, I was very much into content consumption and content creation.
Oh yeah.
And I wanted to like, and I remember going there and saying like, well, I want my kids to work on Code Academy, which was like the predate of like code.org. Mm-hmm. It was like Code Academy. I didn't know how to code, but I knew it was a skill my students would benefit from, like regardless of whether they went into computer science or not. I wanted to get them interested in it so that that was an option. Like they knew something down the road. And it was fun because I didn't know it. They didn't know it. And together we problem solved. And so they said,
"Best way to teach." Yeah.
So what is even better is like, this is the support of admins that you get, right? And so like the computer lab teacher's like, no, I don't know that, but I am not against you coming in and working with your students, but know that you're going to give up your special time. And it's like, I don't care. Like if this is how my kids are going to do it, then I'll go in there. And it's once a week I go in there with them and we did Code Academy, but I would project my screen on the board and I would work right along with them. And I bet you half of my kids' sole goal was to be higher than me and like their points. And so they wanted to be beyond. And even better is I would sit there and like, I would get stumped because again, I love trial and error. I love coding because that's all it is. It's so much of like, run this code, doesn't work. What's wrong with it? And like, that's what they would see. Like I would make an error and they would be so quick to jump on and want to jump on there. And then it was teaching them that I don't want you to tell me an answer. I want you to guide me to that answer.
Oh.
And it was within that year of like teaching kids a different mindset of going like, all right, I'm going to explain it. And it's in that, because that was about the same time as iPads, that I was like, I need to get these kids to create more content in all of it, not just coding, but in science. And so it was getting kids to create content in all of my science areas. And then I also taught remedial math, which was for the kids that were struggling, especially with the state test. And the biggest thing that they did, they never liked to show work. And it was having them do like these explain everythings, which is like a video. And they would have to just write out like how they solved things, but they would be able to save them as a video. And then I would put them all together for like, this problem was solved like three different ways. Here's the three different ways that these students did it. And that way students had not just the way I'm showing them, but we're seeing the way that like three other students did it. And so it was, again, trying to develop students that were able to problem solve, but even more importantly, able to share their understanding to other students and teach other students. Because again, if you can teach it, you've understood it. It is just my way of learning. Like, there was no way I could write. Like, I'm a horrible speller. I've never been a good speller. And every teacher I've ever had that thought they could make me a better speller was like, write these words 25 times. It's like, it doesn't do anything up here. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not getting anything because I'm rewriting it 25 times. But like, if you gave me some kind of like phonemic thing or whatever, you know, those little goofy things that you do for like, you know, all I can think of is assume, but I don't want to say that one. But, you know, like it has a little phrase that goes with it. Yes. Like it's a different way of understanding it. So I then understand it because it's not like this drill. I just don't get drill. I can't do it. And I've always understood things better when it's like coming from my dad or coming from mm-hmm. another student than I did from a frustrated teacher going, this is the third time.
Absolutely. Right? And that frustrated teacher probably doesn't love saying it for the third time either. I mean, they say that we, you know, we teach to our younger selves. We try to become the teacher. I was an outside of the box thinker who did not do super well academically either. And I like to think that it wasn't because I wasn't smart. It was just because I didn't learn the same way as everybody else. And so knowing that you teach a little bit outside of the box and love to get hands-on, what advice would you give to teachers that are looking to start teaching with technology and with robotics?
Oh, mine is just don't be afraid. Like, I think that's the biggest
thing. Oh, you make that sound so easy. Oh, just be brave. Just be-
It's that relinquishing control. And like with me and working with teachers, like they have the benefit of if you're worried about doing something, like especially with like robotics and like the hummingbird kits, again, that's something that I go out and use all the time. One of my favorites, right? And I know there's like that learning curve, right? And it's like going, you might not have all the answers. You might have none of the answers. You might never have used this tool before. But if you give it to your students and you allow them to like experiment with it and take control and take ownership of it, you're going to find like, it's not every kid. Not every kid's going to jump on and understand it really quick. But there's mm-hmm. those students that one, just find it interesting. Like if you can give them like that first challenge that you're doing, right? Like just get this light to light up mm-hmm. and you spark something in them that goes like, if I can get this to light up, what else can I do?
Oh yeah.
And these are kids that like, dude, they live their lives on TikTok, YouTube, the internet, right? They know where to find answers. They know how to come to answers. They're really good at that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just kind of going like, not assuming if we're not in control all the time that kids are just going to go off and do whatever. Like, I don't think inherently every kid wants to do that. Like every kid doesn't want to go like, oh, my teacher's allowing me to kind of do whatever with this thing. I'm going to get into mischief. Like there's definitely some that need a little more structure. Mm-hmm. But again, that's what we're teachers. We know where though, like, you know that, you know, your students, you might not know the tool real well, but you know how the students will
assume best intentions and provide guidance and scaffolding at the same time. Mm-hmm. Those things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Yeah. And then the other thing I say is that there's always resources available that, again, I try to push out to my teachers, like, well, this is available here to help you, like with like Bird Brain. You guys have a website that like really you don't need to know too much. And you can give the kids the device and say, here's the resource to find out how to use everything on it. Like they can go from there. Right. And so it's mm-hmm. knowing your resources. And then the other thing is like, again, I know you said we're going to talk later about like the grant. Mm-hmm. And it's that there are so many resources out in like the community in manufacturing, industry and businesses that really want to give, like they're hoping that what's coming out of schools is their future employee, like their future. I don't want to say employees, we'll say employees, but like, you know, partners that are going to work.
Community members. Yeah. All of those words.
And they want that to grow. Like they want to grow that. And so I feel like a lot more than not, they try to find their ends, but they're so left into like just these vague things like, will you help our school with something? And mm-hmm. instead, like if you have a teacher that's like, I want to do some robotics with students, I can guarantee you there's an industry out there that's doing automation that has somebody that's really good at it that can at least speak about it and would more than likely probably help you if you brought in like a tool that is kind of up their alley. So like you brought in Dash Robots mm-hmm. and a guy that works with automation. Like, again, they probably have no idea how the Dash Robot works, but they can probably get the idea behind how, what it's supposed to do or what, and what, like, and be able to share with students just that kind of knowledge base. And so it's like knowing that there's resources out there, but I also know and encounter that like the content I need to teach might not be within like this STEM like robotics thing. And it's like, well, it is, but we need to find it. Like, and so mm-hmm. how do we fit like this literature project with robotics? And again, it's finding a community that wants to kind of help, because it is, you can put a lot of research into trying to develop a connection between STEM and some content area. Mm-hmm. by yourself. And that's the other thing, is like, don't go it alone. Like if you're in Pennsylvania, you have your IU. And I don't know how many teachers I work with in Pennsylvania that don't even realize that the IU is a resource in like STEM. And so, I know like most states have some kind of intermediary like resource that's available to those schools that like we need to be reached out to. And STEM is one of those things, like, and again, I could speak just really for our intermediate units. And like, I know BOCES up in New York have STEM resources within those. So
yeah,
it's finding those is helpful. But then also just being like, hey, I'm gonna give this a shot. It might not work.
Knowing your resources and being willing to go for it, right?
It might not work sometimes, but all fail forward, and that's okay.
And there's you're modeling that failing forward, right?
Exactly.
Speaking of nerdy, you mentioned the grant. I want to hear about the grant and I want to share it with the listeners. So tell us a little bit about this PA Smart Grant and what you're working on there in rural central Pennsylvania.
So PA Smart is a grant that has been given out for like three or four years now. It's part of the governor's little STEM push. So last year they opened up the window for like 2 weeks of these grants and we applied and we received it. And it's a pretty substantial grant, but it's always focused on STEM. They're very STEM focused grants, particularly on like equipment that will help, equipment and training that will help bring students more
opportunities of STEM. Yeah.
Yeah. Will help bring students more opportunities for it. So we applied and what we applied under is a partnership between our schools. So we have, North Central and located in four counties in North Central PA. And we service 14 very rural school districts, with the two that are a little larger, but still like not cities, like it's bigger towns, but they happen to have like more than one school building. Whereas most of ours are one or two school buildings, like an elementary school and a high school. So our resources are very, like some schools are a little further ahead in STEM, some are a little further behind, but most of them have like one or two teachers that are within the STEM community and STEM field. And so they have nobody to collaborate with. And so what we've developed at our IU is just a STEM ecosystem, for one, of just a community of educators that are within the STEM field. And then we started reaching out to manufacturers and things like that to help kind of just deliver, you know, and I don't want to say professional development, but just deliver like what is happening in industry that could help teachers, right? Mm-hmm. Just so they're part of this, like, how can we help STEM teachers? So then we got this PA Smart Grant. And when talking with like industry professionals, particularly in our area, and our area is really heavy, especially where I'm from in Elk County, is very heavy in powdered metals, a lot of powdered metal plants, a lot of powdered metal manufacturing and things that go to support that. Unfortunately, a lot of our community looks at powdered metal and thinks of a dirty factory and like this old way of things operated. And it's not how they operate anymore. And one of the biggest things that our industry looks for is, in particular, is like automation and people that understand automation, again, because things are going robotic. And while that robotic takes like two jobs away while making one, right? Then there's a downside to that. Like we lost two jobs, but again, we weren't able to fill them in the first place.
Yeah.
But what we're not now able to fill is like this job in that automation. And it's not like they need this advanced degree to get that, but what they need, and this is what we hear from industry all the time, is they need that thinking. I don't know how many industry folks that we've sat down with that said like that, I just need people that graduate from high school with a problem solving mindset. Somebody that doesn't encounter their first issue and go, this machine's not working, and go to my boss and say like, why isn't this machine working? Well, what have you tried to make it work? What have you done? Or this process didn't work. Like, what steps have you taken? And that's what they're seeing, this huge decline in that ability to counter a problem and solve it. And their problem is, well, this is a huge decline, which would have been all right in the button pushing age of manufacturing. I just need a guy to hit a button or toss things off of a conveyor belt. They need now more than ever a problem-solving mindset, because that's what their workforce needs. And again, not advanced degree, like that's even better. You go and go into a technical school or a college or a community college, But just that mindset, like they will take you right out of high school if you can do that. And the ability to climb those things and to make not only that, like I'm on the floor in a manufacturing field, the ability to climb is huge. Like you might be doing something small at first, but mm-hmm. if you stay at it, you can really, you know, gain even more throughout that manufacturer. And then we also hear that if those don't change, if we don't bring in students, if we don't start creating these students that are problem-solving thinkers, these industries are going to move out of our area. And that is not good. And that is what our big delivery for like administrators who, again, face this problem of like, well, how do I fit this in while also fitting in curriculum? And there is mm-hmm. nothing better than when they argue that to a manufacturer who's right there and says like, just, I don't give a hoot about the test. Cause I can tell you, you're getting A pluses on that test that I can't keep employed for 2 weeks before they leave. But what I can tell you is these kids that are doing things in STEM that I'm seeing out there with STEM are developing those things that we want. And so we got this buy-in from them, which then leads to this project. Again, I go on like these long.
But so powerful to, and the way you talk about it, it's so simple to think, of course, you bring the person who's going to be working with these students once they get out of school and put them in the rooms with the teachers and the administrators. But as an educator, I never did that. I never thought about it. I didn't hear any case studies about that. And I just think it's so brilliant to actually ask the people who are going to be hiring the student and say, hey, do these kids have everything they need? Especially when they're seeing a major deficit that arguably is fixable. You just need a bunch of Greg Masers. We just need to.
Right. And it is a fixable issue. With this grant, what we've done is each school will get a set of like the hummingbird kits and micro bits, and then all this consumable material so that mm-hmm. it's the idea is like a maker space type thing. And what happens is every month, that's our goal, is a manufacturer will come up with a problem that they want students to prototype a solution for. And this is from the manufacturers, and I thought was just awesome. Is what one of the ones said was, what would be great is if we did something that a machine now does, but we had to do manually before. And what we're going to do is show them how we did it manually before. And that set up that challenge of like, again, I'm going to use something very simple of like moving this object from this over to here, mm-hmm. right? And at the end of it, once every student has like submitted a project, we will show them what machine does that now and how it does that so that they can go like, well, this was my solution, but here is what the solution is that they currently have. And that way we're not, because again, if you show a student an example of something, a lot of their mind just goes right to that. And so that was the trying to keep it as open as possible. But then at the same time, we also want to level these things because we want it to take place from third was our goal. And I'm now working with doing it through K all the way up to high school. But that's going to be a separate project with the younger ones, because again, I wanted everybody to participate. And so schools can sign up a class. And like, again, we hope to grow this, so it's more than one class. But that class would then utilize the tools to develop this project. They would have a partner manufacturer that would jump on like a couple times throughout that month that they're doing this challenge to help them with design thinking, because a big one is planning is the biggest thing, is like that planning mm-hmm. ideation stage, which again is overlooked a lot mm-hmm. in any type of STEM activity. It's just trying to think it through. And so we really want to focus on that and ideation and trying to collaborate with other students and also the manufacturer to come up with best ideas that you think you can then construct a prototype. And then they would share it with those manufacturers. And our hopes is they would share that with the larger group, because another part of this grant is that they will get these like conference setup things. Mm-hmm. As well as conference software, so that they can connect one with the manufacturer. We hope the manufacturer might be able to come in person mm-hmm. sometimes, yeah. but knowing that we want to make sure that we can keep them connected as much as we can, that they'll be able to meet virtually, but then also meet with all of the students virtually or with like little regions, just to be able to share, like especially the final product, because that is like the most, one of the most important things I find is like, how do we get kids to share their experience with a bigger audience? And again, that's something that they can already do. They have TikTok. That's a larger audience. I can make a video and I can share that. But again, how much of that is like carefully curated content, like carefully, like they thought these things through. I want them to share like the best stuff that they have.
And with an authentic audience and an audience that is a little intimidating. Like that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And if you peel back the layers that you've just described of this grant and this project, there's so much content in there. There are so many things that will translate not only into academic success and testing success, but also into success beyond school careers. It's like you've cracked the code for school success and life success, because unfortunately where we are right now, those don't always look the same. Mm-hmm. And schools sometimes have to choose which one they want to focus on.
And like, so I'll say for our region, again, that is like an attitude that a lot of administrators have. But as you hear, like what happens when these companies move out? Like also, is that going to affect our school? Is all of a sudden mm-hmm. we're going to shrink in size or there's no jobs? Look, it's definitely going to affect. In everything, it's always administrators that are the hardest sell. And I understand why they're always the hardest sell. Mm-hmm. And again, my approach, which might not be the best, like I get in trouble for it all the time, is I always go to teachers first. I will always go to teachers first. Like I'm just offering them something. And if they're interested in it, I want them to naturally be interested in it. Because if they then go back to you and talk about this importance, you're going to be interested in it. Mm-hmm. And I always hit like a wall a lot of times. And so with this project, I know if I would have went through administrators, I wouldn't have gotten as many teachers to participate, because one, it was a short notice because we just got this grant in like July and we had to run our first professional development in August. So we had to set all that up. So it was like a 2-week window that I knew half my administrators have been like, nope, not sending that to my teachers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I went like, these are teachers that I know are very good with STEM, have always, like, again, I didn't want to pigeonhole it to just STEM teachers, but I knew to get this to work at first, if I can get buy-in from every school, and if that's the STEM or if that's the gifted or if that's the special ed teacher, doesn't matter. But if I know I've worked with them and they're like this collaborative minded kind of just want to do something different, let's bring them in. And so I was able to get, like, we have 14 districts. I was able to get commitment from all 14, but only got the 12 to send at least one representative come in. And I have yet to, I know most of them have went back to principals and talked with principals and have yet to receive any issue. Because again, it's a great program in that we're providing things. So yeah. I know that helps.
I could listen to you talk about this grant all day, and we'll have to have you back on so you can tell us about what it looks like down the road once you've put some of these PD, once it's in practice, because the ideas are so amazing. And I think that it's going to turn out to be even bigger and more exciting than you think it is. But I want to know, what makes you a flocking amazing educator?
So knowing my limitations, A, is one. Ooh. Knowing that as I grow older, I become less relevant in educational technology. And I understand that. I understand my relevancy in places. But I think what makes me flocking amazing would be, one, I'm passionate about what I do. Mm-hmm. And I'm very enthusiastic about what I do. And like, I'm going to be 42 in like 2 days. That's like the one thing that I don't ever want to lose. Like, if there's one comment I get from people that I like the most, is like, man, you're really enthusiastic about stuff. And I've gotten that my whole life. I've just always tried to be enthusiastic about things. And I still get that. And it's like, God, man, as I go get older, like there's definitely like, oh, all right, it's Friday. Let's get, but as soon as I start going in and talking like this today, this Friday doing this, I was like, why'd I pick Friday? But once I get going and talking, like right before this, I did like a Google training with the secretary. And it was just like, if I can meet you somewhere in like our interest, like, and even if I can't, I'm still going to share what I do very excitedly and very passionately. But I also find my niches and go like, this is what I'm passionate about. This is what I want to do. And STEM particularly is one of those things where it's like, I know I can do a good job with STEM. and being a support role. And that's the other thing, is I feel like I found that I don't necessarily need to be a leader, but I want to find those leaders and I want to be that person that supports them. And so, like, we have a state conference called Pete and C, and I don't know how many teachers I've worked with that I've went, you need to present this. You need to present this. And it might be scary and intimidating, but people will love what you're presenting and it needs to be shared. Oh, I don't want to do it. I'll tell you what, you want me to sign up with you and like, I'll be your co-presenter and I will just stand there. And if you get nervous, I will just jump in if you want. Or do you just want me to be in the front row of your session? I'll do that. But like, that to me is like what I just keep trying to build on. It's like, I've always felt like, man, you got to be a leader. You got to be a leader. That's like that final state. Like, this is where you need to climb to. But it's like, when you can get other people to step in a leadership role and then you can see them climb, like, it's amazing to me. And that's what we need more of. Like, I can try to lead a small group, but I would rather build an army from all of these wonderful leaders that are then spreading out to all these other places and doing that. And that's what I think is going to make this project work well, is I hope that I make a leader out of every one of those 14 school districts, that regardless of whether I'm doing this or not, a project continues on, the mindset continues on with those leaders that are out there. So that's what I think would make me flocking amazing.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that what you're describing is leadership, and it's one of the most challenging and elusive forms of leadership. Service leadership and supportive leadership, where you are not the person standing at the front of the room, but the person that is very quietly helping to push and inspire and guide people to achieve and to kind of step over you to take on that leadership role, is very difficult to come by. And I think it is what allows organizations to run smoothly and allows people to reach their full potential. So I think that is leadership, and it is what makes you flocking amazing, and that it makes your district and your organization very lucky to have you.
Thank you. Yeah, I would agree. I would rather somebody else get that credit, because I feel like it elevates you. It makes you feel proud. It makes you feel accomplished.
Yeah.
And I love when they get accolades, and I love that I was a part of that. Like, that to me makes me feel good. Like, if you get accolades for me, you did, or like you continue to climb further than, you know, I mean, I've worked with like teachers that taught, we met somewhere and they shared something that I thought was great. It's like, well, let's share this at Pete and C. And then 2 years later, they're like curriculum, it's, you know, a supervisor of a school district, because like, that's awesome to me. Like, yeah, sometimes you get a little envious and you go like, man, what?
I'm looking, I have a big print on my wall that says, we rise by lifting others.
Yes.
And I feel like I want to like hold it up according to what you've been saying.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Greg, thank you so much for being here. This was such a fascinating conversation. We can't wait to check back in with you about how your progress with the PA Smart Grant is going. And listeners, if you want to talk to Greg, if you want to hear more about this grant, if you want to, if you are hearing some of that passion and you're like, okay, I need this guy in my Rolodex, like I need to connect with him, please do. That is one of the purposes of this podcast. Reach out to us at BirdBrain via email, via social media. We will put you in contact with Greg, and some of his sparkly enthusiasm can rub off on you, and he can share some of these fabulous ideas, because I know he has more than we were able to showcase in this episode today.
Yes. Yeah. I'm always happy to collaborate and share. And if you're in PA and you go to Pete and C, which I again encourage everybody to go to, it's our state's technology expo, but it's STEM and technology. And it's very teacher oriented. I will be there. And I'm happy to always chat. And I believe hopefully I'll have a session that's going to be on this grant. I did put in a session for that.
So exciting. Yeah. Oh, yay. Okay. I can't wait to hear about that. Greg, again, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation.
Thank you very much. It was an honor to be here.
Listeners, thank you for joining us for Flocking Amazing, the podcast for quick, bite-sized conversations with real teachers sharing their real expertise and providing real inspiration to us all. We'll have a new teacher conversation dropping soon, so don't flocking miss it.